The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
Well, the FISA memo bomb has been dropped. It's pretty much confirmed everything the Republicans had been talking about in interviews for the last 2 weeks. I don't think there was really anything new. There was just Republican confirmation on what we already knew. Is that why the information was a little, I don't know, a little underwhelming? It was billed as a memo full of classified information, and I honestly struggled to find anything that we considered damaging to national security. Well, what happened there? That makes the Democrats, the FBI, DOJ look kind of ridiculous trying to block its release. Why were they trying to block it? What was in that memo that was so damaging that people could lose their lives? It also makes the Republicans look a little bit ridiculous, I think, in the buildup and the hype that led to Friday's release. Don't get me wrong. The information is really interesting, really interesting. And if proven correct, it shows that there is corruption in the United States. The GOP is accusing the FBI and the DOJ of lying to the FISA court in order to get a warrant for former Trump advisor Carter Page. Carter Page is somebody that we've been looking at for quite a while ourselves. The FBI was looking into Carter Page long before anybody else was. They claim that the Steele dossier was listed in the initial FISA application, but the roles of Fusion GPS and the DNC in the Clinton campaign were never mentioned. That is the problem. And here's why. If it is true, then the FBI and DOJ were knowingly trying to pass off partisan opposition research as actual intelligence, and they hid the truth from the court, not once, but four times. They would later include things like a report from Michael Isikoff. Isikoff said he was shocked that his reporting was used as something to bolster the FBI and DOJ's case in the FISA court because he was only reporting on what was already out there. He was reporting on the dossier. This wasn't new reporting. This wasn't a secondary source. Was that the way that it was presented to the FISA court? If so, that's a very big deal. It looks really bad. However, it's only half the story. And we're not going to get the other half from the Democrats. The Democrats have already written their own rebuttal memo, and they are expected to vote on that later this week and release it. I think if they release it later this week, they're going to vote, I think, today. We can also expect to hear from the FBI and the DOJ at some point as well. It's the Great Memo Wars of 2018. When is this going to end? I don't care what somebody wrote in a memo to make their side look good. I really don't care. I want the facts. Transparency is the answer. Not more memos. Transparency. If we want to know, because this is what this is all about, what did they say to the secret court to be able to get the warrant? If they didn't tell that this was opposition research and that Michael Isikoff's, you know, reporting was not confirmation or a second source, it was an article on the dossier. If they didn't say where the money came from, the Fusion GPS connection to Russia, the FBI's connection to Fusion GPS through its own agents, and the agents, their spouses, connected to Fusion GPS and connected to the Hillary Clinton campaign. It's a real mess. If they didn't reveal all of that to FISA, then there's a massive problem with the Obama, DOJ, and FBI.
It's Monday, February 5th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Now, here's what's hard. It doesn't matter to the Russian part of this investigation. If the FBI was investigating Carter Page in advance, which I believe they were, if he went over and did things that he shouldn't have done, we have to know that. And it really has nothing to do with Donald Trump. They were investigating him before Donald Trump. They were looking into his connections because he was being recruited by the Russians. He's a dope. So who was he meeting with? What was he saying? We have to know that. We also have to know the connections with Uranium One and all of the billions of dollars that came in from Rosatom to our congressmen, our senators, and our Department of State. What was the connection between Russia and the Clintons? They clearly tried to recruit or befriend the Trump administration. We know that. It didn't happen. And it didn't happen because they didn't have the goods. We all also know that if in that meeting they would have had the goods on Hillary Clinton, they would have taken them. Just as fast as the DNC took the stuff from Christopher Steele, they would have taken it. That's the problem. The problem is everybody would have done it if they could have. So you can't arrest people for what they didn't do, what they would have done. That's not a crime. You have to go after the source, and the source is Russia. Tomorrow, I'm going to start a chalkboard that I think we might even have to go back in time and look at Russia again. And show you exactly what their intent was. And it had nothing to do with Donald Trump. They would have done it if it was Ted Cruz. They were doing everything they can to make sure that we don't have confidence in the system, that our confidence in the voting system was destroyed. Our confidence in the two-party system was destroyed. And when I say the two-party system, why do you think that, WikiLeaks, I'll just refer to it as Russia. Why do you think Russia released the information about the DNC and what they did with Bernie Sanders? Why do you think they did that? They did that because they needed to break up the coalition in the DNC and not to get Donald Trump to win. They broke that coalition because they needed the infighting that the press is refusing to cover right now, which is a huge story. They needed the Democrats to turn on each other. They need the Republicans to turn on each other. And then those four or eight or how many groups that breaks into, they all fight with each other. That's what they want. Every bit of chaos that they could sow, they've sown. And we're ignoring it. It's really, you've got a brain tumor. And the doctor just keeps giving you, first it's aspirin, then it's Tylenol, then it's Tylenol 3, then it's Percocet, then it's a fentanyl patch. For the love of Pete, man, what's the problem? What's giving me the severe migraines? Oh, I don't know. It's a giant grapefruit tumor in the middle of your head. Russia is the tumor. These memos and everything else, That's fentanyl. And if you've ever had fentanyl before, you know how spooky that stuff is. And it says right on the box, or it used to, maybe it doesn't anymore. Somebody who has fentanyl, call me up. Tell me if the box still says this. 10 years ago, the box on fentanyl, which is a little patch that is, it's a great blessing. If you're in pain, it's a great blessing. But if you're in pain and you take it, it's also a great curse because the clock on you begins to tick. It says on the box, or it used to, for end of life use only. It's when they just want you out of pain. You just want to be out of pain and you're going to die anyway. Honestly, we're so far beyond. Do you realize? We're going to talk about this later. Do you realize that our borrowing this year? Do you know how much we're going to borrow as a country? I want to tell you this. I want you to think about that. In 2008, we had about $800 billion in circulation globally. So all of the cash, if you took every dollar, every dime, every penny, every quarter, every $100 bill, and you put it all in a pile and you started adding it up, all of it up, we had about between $800 and $900 billion in cash globally. This year, to keep our government running, we are going to borrow $1 trillion. We're going to borrow $1 trillion. To give you some indication on if that's a big deal or not, that's an 84% increase from last year. Anything that takes our eye off the ball of limited government, of reducing spending, of giving money to the people. No, I'm sorry. Let me rephrase that. Letting people keep their money and not taking it from them. Being able to guarantee some sort of transparency. Restoring the credibility of any institution that has lost its credibility. And that's really everything. I mean, all the way to the bakery. You know, the baker might hate people. Anything that has us take our eye off the ball is a refusal on our part to look at what is causing the headaches. It's a tumor. And the press is doing nothing but putting a fentanyl patch on our arms for end of life use only. All right, I want to tell you about a great night's sleep you're going to have the minute you have a Casper mattress in your home. I have a Casper in my house, and I have great night's sleep. Casper has it's a combination of foams that they pioneered. If you've ever had a foam mattress, oh my gosh, they suck. Maybe it's just me, but you're on fire. Like halfway through the night, you could drown in your own sweat, and it feels like that bed has just become a sponge. The good thing is it's so damn hot, the water evaporates. This is breathable material, so you're guaranteed to sleep cool. Plus, the mattresses are built to last years. This is a new product that they pioneered. Casper, you need a good night's sleep? Just try it. They'll ship it to you in a box, a little teeny compact box for free. You just open up the box. I warn you, open that plastic part of that. Cut that plastic off where you want the mattress because it's going to come out and all of a sudden there's a mattress. Now, you sleep on that thing and if you don't love it, you don't have to put it back in the tiny box. They'll come and refund every single penny. No questions asked. They pick it up for free. They know it's a better way to try a bed by sleeping on it for a week or two, or 100 nights, a third of the year, than it is to go to a store. That's why they don't sell them in stores, and that is also why you can get this Casper mattress at such an unbelievable price. Try yours now at 100 nights for your own home free. Free shipping, free returns. All you have to do is just order it. They'll ship it. If you don't love it, everything's returned. Casper.com. Use the promo code BECK at Casper.com. Save $50 on the purchase of a select mattress. Terms and conditions do apply. It is Casper.com. Promo code BECK.
Glenn Beck Mercury. Glenn Beck.
There's some really disturbing things that are happening over in Europe that are, I believe, at this time, being orchestrated by Russia, and it's here as well, and we'll have to talk about that coming up. I just want to go into this memo just a little bit more about Jason Petrillon, and Jason is our head researcher, and we've been going over the Russia stuff and following the Uranium One and the Russia connection there, also long before Donald Trump was even a nominee, even stepping in and saying he wanted to run before he was a candidate. We were talking about Russia and what they were going to try to do during this election. They've done it. One of the names that came up, and for the life of me, Jason, I can't remember why. Why did we first start talking about Carter Page? Because we were on Carter Page before he joined the Trump campaign, and I think even before the campaign itself.
Yeah, there was that weird string of, I want to say it was like around 2008, 2009-ish, something like that, of like heavy Russian, espionage and influence. It was just all of a sudden it just came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And there was the whole thing with Anna Chapman and that huge ring that the FBI busted up. And then there was this strange story of these Russians that were trying to get close to Wall Street, and they were doing everything they could to try and infiltrate like think tanks and other people that were surrounding like our financial institutions and structures. This is actually some pretty scary stuff.
Yeah.
Well, during that time, the FBI got on through human intelligence sources and also surveillance. They come across these Russians that were talking back and forth to each other about this quote unquote idiot.
Right.
Carter Page.
Right.
And apparently Carter Page, I don't know. The more you look at him, he just seems like a guy that just wants to be liked so well. Mm-hmm. He goes to to Moscow, and he was an investment banker or something like that with some energy companies over there. And every time people talked about him, he was just the guy that just wanted everyone to think that he was a little bit more than he was. Mm-hmm. And he was doing everything.
He wanted to be somebody.
He wanted to be somebody. Yeah. He wanted to have influence. So him saying that, yeah, I'm connected to Trump actually made sense, because mm-hmm. he used those types of connections mm-hmm. to try and appear to be more than he was. Mm-hmm. Well, he was on the FBI's radar when these two Russians were talking about him. And they were like, yeah, we're trying to get into, this company. And we're like talking to this guy, Carter Page. And he, basically doesn't know what he's talking about. It's a dead end. Well, those were SVR, the equivalent to our CIA. That was Russia's, foreign intelligence service. Mm-hmm.
And what they were saying when they say he's a dead end is he was all talk.
Right.
That he really didn't have any connections. And they mocked him, ridiculed him because he wasn't, he wasn't a big deal. And they quickly figured that out.
Right. But so you can see how the FBI, though, their radar shot up, though. That you already have this guy. He's been known to, probably unknowingly. I don't think Carter Page knew that he was being targeted by Russian intelligence. Mm-hmm. But because of his connections there, and because of connections he was having when he was going over to Russia, which the Russians were targeting him when he would travel to Russia when mm-hmm. he was based in Moscow. Mm-hmm. And of course, basically, everybody's connected to Russian intelligence or the mafia or something in Russia anyway. But all the people that he was dealing with and running around with, all those circles he was in, the moment he was actually signed on with the Trump campaign, they were like, oh, whoa, what's going on? That gave them the probable cause to say, okay, maybe we should look in a little bit more.
Right. And it's not necessarily that Donald Trump knew any of this or anything. The guy, Carter Page is a moron.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of guy that gets into trouble.
Yeah.
And then you couple that with Flynn and Manafort, and Trump doesn't even have to be involved in any of this. And it doesn't even have to have collusion between Page and Flynn and Manafort. It's just a really big bonfire that somebody needed to look at. And we still need to look at Carter Page, General Flynn, and Manafort.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.
So you've heard me talk a bit about Brickhouse Nutrition and their product Dawn to Dusk. It's fantastic. It helps me get through my crazy days and still have enough energy for the wife and kids when I get home at night. They just released their superfood product. It's called Field of Greens. And I wanted to share this testimonial. It's from James in Nevada. For the last month, I have been taking Field of Greens. Not only did my wife get sick twice, but so did my son and my daughter once. Every day I took Field of Greens, and I was the only one in my house who didn't get knocked out by whatever the bug was that took everyone else down. Thank you for turning me on to Brickhouse Nutrition. What separates Fields of Greens from some of these other powdered drinks is that it's real food. It's not an extract or a supplement. You just take one scoop and put it in 8 ounces of water, shake or stir, and you're done. It's easy. It tastes great. And with the offer code STEW, you're going to get their premium shaker absolutely free. Go to BrickHouseStew.com and try Field of Greens today. Get your free shaker bottle with the offer code STEW. It's BrickHouseStew.com, BrickHouseStew.com.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
So I just want to see if I have this right. Because I think I slipped through a wormhole. I don't know when it happened, but I am dead. This is definitely not the same Earth that I was on, you know, for the rest of my life. Earlier part of my life. And I believe I've slipped through several wormholes. But this one, just let's do the math. Last night, I watched the Super Bowl, and the game was the best part. The game was actually compelling and exciting. The halftime show really lacked any kind of, you know, malfunctions. It was good. Prince, even though he was dead, sang a duet. As I'm watching, the commercials all sucked. Nothing really held my attention in the commercials. Then Brady loses and the Eagles win. Come on. This is not the Earth we all were on just last week. I am not a sports fan, and I was, it was compelling. I can't remember the last time the Super Bowl was this compelling. And what happened to the commercials? Seriously, what happened? I mean, I had a hard time. My daughter said to me, "Dad, Justin Timberlake is the king of pop." Excuse me, what? "Dad, Justin Timberlake, he's like the biggest pop star of our generation." Wait, wasn't he the guy in NSYNC? "Yes, Dad." "Oh, good God. And he's the best your generation can do?" Wow, we're in deep trouble. We had a conversation. I remember taking my daughters, they were young. I remember taking them to an NSYNC concert, and Justin Timberlake flew over their head. And it was the biggest deal for them. And I remember I didn't get my hearing back from, you know, the 13-year-old girl screams for about a month. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't the best hearing experience, if you will. I really even couldn't hear him sing. I think last night was maybe possibly the first time that I've actually heard him sing. And again, King of Pop? Are we just throwing those titles around higgledy piggledy now? I mean, is it? It may just be me. I don't know. So I had a difficult time last night. I thought he was great. Great might be a little strong. I thought he was very good. I thought he wasn't defensive. How's that? I thought he wasn't defensive. And that's a big deal for the Super Bowl, at least lately. But then we get to the commercials. And I mean, when the Danny DeVito, M&M commercial is the most memorable for me, and it's mainly because I haven't had an M&M in about 2 months. You know, that's a problem. I don't know what happened. Is everybody afraid to do comedy now? Is that what's happening? Is everybody just like, can't do that? You can't do that. Danny DeVito, you're going to point out that he's bald? What about, you'll be sued by the bald people. There'll be riots on the street. No, it's a white guy. It's a bald, white, old guy. Everybody hates those. Oh, so that's the only thing that we'd probably make fun of. Maybe. Is that what it is? Because I was intrigued by the movie trailers. I liked the movie trailers. Thought those were good. But not if the game wasn't good, nothing would have held me. Nothing would have held me. May I address the MLK problem? The MLK commercial with the Dodge Ram. Did anybody really have a problem with this? I mean, I did, but it's not the problem that everybody else has. Here is the commercial for the Dodge Ram that aired last night in the Super Bowl.
You don't have to know about Plato and Aristotle to serve. You don't have to know the theory of relativity to serve. You don't have to know the second theory of thermodynamics in physics to serve. You only need a heart full of grace. Soul generated by love.
And then it goes to the logo of Built to Serve, Dodge Ram. Okay. The controversy is, how dare you? How dare you use Martin Luther King like that? How dare you use Martin Luther King? I mean, first of all, that was an inspiring commercial. I mean, anytime you can hear the words of Martin Luther King, that should be a good thing, right? The problem is, everybody's problem is that Dodge would use his words to sell a truck. That's an abomination. How dare Dodge use his words to sell a truck? May I just point out, I can't play speeches from Martin Luther King on the radio. I can't say to you, I want you to really listen to this speech. I want you to really listen to this. I can't even play the I Have a Dream speech today. The only day I can play that without getting sued is Martin Luther King Day. His family has such a tight rein on all of his words and all of the audio and all of the video that you literally cannot play the I Have a Dream speech except on that day, or they'll sue you. They are as protective as Disney is with their trademarks. So it's not, don't blame Dodge. Dodge had nothing to do with it. Dodge came up with the idea and said, we're going to do a deal on service, and our slogan for our truck is going to be Built to Serve. It's a beautiful commercial. It shows people serving. It shows police officers. It shows fire. It shows people helping each other in the inner city and on farmlands. It shows people helping people in, you know, hospitals and babies and all of the stuff. It's a great, stirring commercial. And it was such a good commercial that the King family decided to sell the rights of their father or their grandfather to sell the rights to Dodge to be able to make that commercial. So anybody who is on the high and mighty path today, how dare they use, first of all, good. How many people heard the words of Martin Luther King? I've never heard that speech before. I love that. I've never heard it before. So how many people heard that speech from Martin Luther King for the very first time last night, thanks to Dodge? So I don't understand your complaint. And if you want to take it up with anybody, take it up with the King family, because the King family approved, and I can guarantee you, cashed a check because of it. Many wise Americans understand the importance of emergency preparedness, and yet we don't prepare for some reason. We say we're going to, but then for some reason we just don't. Why? Why? Why do we do that? You can take a couple of small steps, and you'll make a crisis seem like an inconvenience. I don't know if you've seen the stock market. I've been saying that there was going to be a melt up in the next 12 to 18 months. And maybe, God forbid, we have already passed that. Maybe this climb to, what was it, 28 was our melt up. I don't think so. But the stock market is very, very, very uneasy. And one of the reasons is because of things like our bonds. Well, we are borrowing $1 trillion, an 84% increase year over year. We're borrowing $1 trillion. We're cutting our taxes, but we're spending faster than ever before. What are we doing? What are we doing? We're headed for a train wreck. But you know what? I heard great advice the other day. What are you going to do? I could sit here and I could freak out about everything. I could worry about everything. But you know what? I can't change the world. I can't change the world. I can only change me. So change you. My Patriot Supply. My Patriot Supply will help you plan for an emergency. And then you've done everything you can. And you can go and enjoy your life. Every person in your household right now will get a 2-week food supply kit from My Patriot Supply for $67. Now that is outrageous. 2 weeks per person, breakfast, lunch, dinner, everything you need for $67. Go right now to preparewithglenn.com, preparewithglenn.com, or you can call them at 800-977-0542, 800-977-0542, or preparewithglenn.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Okay, there's a couple of things that that I want to bring to your attention that are kind of difficult at times for people to understand because they feel good and you know don't you know pee all over the party, but it's always a careful balance, and this is something that we've been talking about for the last 10 years or longer. And that is the budget and jobs and how the monetary system works, how the Fed prints money, what it's trying to do. We've gone over shows. Last week I did a chalkboard again on the velocity of money. And that means how many times a dollar is spent by someone from the moment it's born at the printing press to the time it comes back to the Federal Reserve. So it goes from the Federal Reserve to the bank. The bank then loans that money to a business to, you know, increase, you know, and build new widgets. That money then is spent on buying something. So there's number one. The business buys something with it. Then whoever that dollar ends up in, they either put it in the bank, which then is returned back to the Fed, there's one, or they spend it on something. They have to spend it on, you know, gas or food. So they spend it, let's say, at the grocery store. What does the grocer spend that dollar on? Because now we have two. If the grocer goes out and he buys something, let's say he wants to go buy a new TV. There's three. What is the TV people? What do they spend that money on? Well, they've had a good year, and so they're going to go on vacation. There's four. When they go out on vacation, then they spend that at a restaurant, and they give it to a tip as a tip. There's five. And it goes on and on and on. When our country is doing well, that dollar is spent about 18 times, between 17 and 18 times before it returns back to the place of its birth, the Federal Reserve. During the Great Depression, that number was, I think, 6.4, meaning the velocity, nobody was spending money. They were keeping their money. They would get it, they had to spend it on essentials, and then they would put it away. So it would return back to the bank, and it had no velocity. Nobody was buying anything they didn't need. It was in the mid-sixes, maybe 6.2 during the Great Depression, very low. We're now at 5.6, and that's why they've been priming the pump. That's why they've been printing all this money, trying to get somebody to spend it. Now, let me give you a couple of stories. We just repatriated, which means we just lowered the taxes down to, it's 20% for these companies like Apple. Apple has, we're going to round around these numbers. They have, I think, about $300 billion outside of the country. U.S. dollars sitting in a bank doing nothing. They're now bringing that money back in because the taxes are low, and that's why they're going to build new offices and new buildings and new products, and they're hiring people and they're giving bonuses. The same with Microsoft, the same with all of the big companies. The big companies have $2.4 trillion sitting overseas waiting to come home. That's why when we keep priming the pump, it's not going anywhere because people will buy things and then it will sit in a bank. And it'll sit in the bank with these companies, or it will go to Wall Street with these companies. They're not spending it on you. They're not building new product because you're not buying them. So now we have two things going on. The federal government wants to do a $1.5 trillion stimulus, which is, again, they say it's for infrastructure, but it's just to get people spending money. At the same time, the government now is set to borrow $1 trillion. $1 trillion. This is an important announcement that happened last week that nobody paid attention to from the Treasury Department. $1 trillion this fiscal year. That is almost double what the government borrowed last year. It's an 84% jump. U.S. Treasury expects to borrow $955 billion. It was $519 billion last year. The uptick in borrowing is another complication in the heated debate in Congress of whether to spend more money on infrastructure, the military, disaster relief, blah, 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 blah. The debt is already up significantly, even before Congress allots more money to any of these other areas. So what is the problem with this? I need to explain this. We need to go into what is spooking the market today. Inflation. Why is inflation a problem? Too few goods, too much money chasing those goods.
Mercury.
You know, I like to watch the Super Bowl for the commercials, usually because the game is just boring as snot. And that comes, I know, from somebody who's not a sports fan. But come on, it's usually boring as snot. Last night was the exact opposite in so many ways. I thought the commercials were boring, and yet maybe they weren't. The commercials last night told us something about what research tells people who are trying to sell us products. Because what they want to do is they want to convince you, I'm just like you. So what were they trying to convince us last night? What were they trying to say? See, we're just like you. A beautiful newborn baby cries and fidgets in her hospital bed. She's perfect. A nurse lifts her up to comfort her. It's revealed that the child is missing both legs below the knee and one arm. But she's still perfect. That was a Toyota commercial last night. Hitting a ball out of the park. It was a commercial, you know, for Toyota, but well, it wasn't. It was about a Paralympic gold medalist. In 60 seconds, we saw her birth. We saw her struggles to use her mechanical limbs. We saw her failures, and we saw her triumph. Now, if you believe in eugenics, you know, there's no quality of life for those born with deformities like that. I mean, but how can you possibly think that after watching Lauren thrive and go on to win 8 gold medals? In that 1 minute, Toyota showed the world that all life matters. It's important to notice that, you know, or mention that there were no cars mentioned in the ad. Because that wasn't the point. Toyota wanted to reach in and say, we're just like you. They've transitioned, or they are transitioning, to something called a mobility company. It's because cars are going to change. But they wanted to show that the technology that they're developing is going to help humanity. Dodge also opted to showcase their new technology, but the car maker was heavily criticized for the commercial. It was a commercial for the Dodge Ram truck. I don't know if you've seen this or seen all of the, oh my gosh, the outrage over it. Martin Luther King was used in the ad as speech, serving as the background. Exactly the way that, I don't even remember who did it last time with Paul Harvey, and this is a farmer. This is the same thing. People are outraged that Dodge could use Martin Luther King's words to sell cars. I don't see it that way. Anytime we can listen to Martin Luther King, I think it's a good thing. And boy, do we need to hear his words of empowerment now. Yes, Dodge was selling their new Ram truck, but they were also selling and reinforcing what we believe about ourselves, but we're not hearing it. That we're good. And we can serve each other. It doesn't have to be like this. In 120 seconds, the Toyota and Dodge commercials conveyed the message that advancements in technology could be used for good. But more importantly, I think in 120 seconds, Dodge and Toyota reflected who we really are and what we want to be.
It's Monday, February 5th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
So let me follow this path down the road for a second. What did the Super Bowl commercials really teach us last night? Because remember, you don't spend that kind of money without all kinds of testing. You're not sitting around in the room going, I don't know, let's throw this out and see what happens with this one. You're doing all kinds of testing. So what did that testing apparently tell the ad makers? That Americans are tired. That Americans want hope. That Americans want somebody to articulate a vision that is good and hopeful. That we work together, we come together, that we become our greater selves again, that we are truly still the Americans that we've always wanted to be. That's what the Super Bowl told us last night. All of those commercials, that's what they were selling to us. And remember, you can only sell something to people who believe they have a need for it. Our need is someone just saying, we're good. We are. We know it. We know it. We're good. We're misguided. We have each gone his own way. We've lost sight of what's important. We've been convinced, and some of it with reason, that you know what? We're not the country that we thought we were. And yet, at the same time, we are much better than the country we think we are now. It's really interesting how life is all about balance. That's all it is. I told my son, you know, we've battled back and forth. I want to talk to you about this. I've been meaning to talk to you about this. I really need your help on something. But I took away his, you know, all of his gaming and everything else. And this is about 2 years ago. And we went through some really tough times and took it away. And he finally understood that I'm not taking it away because I'm a mean dad. I'm taking it away because, dude, you can't handle it. You can't handle it. You get lost in it. It's a balance. You have to be able to turn it off and go read a book. You can't become consumed by it. But isn't that really not just games? Isn't that everything we do? Everything from our job, identifying our who we are with our job, to whatever our vice is. We have a problem right now that I don't think we believe in forgiveness anymore. I'm not sure we do. I think we just believe now that there are some people that aren't worthy of receiving forgiveness. You know, I'll never forgive you for that. What does that even mean? It's hard to forgive, especially when somebody else, you know, is where they don't seem worthy of it. I mean, this guy, I mean, what do you want me just to forgive him? Want me just to kind of. No, the guy doesn't even get it. Somehow or another, we want people to be humbled enough. We want to see them give us the reason to forgive them. Now, imagine how ironic that seems to God. Really, think of that. Think of Jesus in the end. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. He wasn't up there going, these bastards, I'm never going to forgive you. You're not humble enough. I'm not going to forgive you. Can you imagine that? No. But I think as hard as it is to forgive other people, I think it's harder to forgive ourselves. It's amazing because we don't understand balance. It's exactly the same difficulty we have in forgiving other people. It's humility and worthiness. Forgiving yourself, which is the only way to really make a change, it requires both humility and self-worth. Those things never go together. Has anybody noticed that? Humility and self-worth. If everything is going well, we begin to think, oh yeah, you know what? We did it. We figured it out. I did it. I was amazing. I have just threaded this needle like nobody else ever had. We begin to believe that it was us. Look at me. And we become arrogant. And then when things aren't going so well, I failed. Man, I'm stupid. What is wrong with me? Man, just the dumbest. I'm the worst. Hide, lest he see your nakedness. The snake whispered to Eve. You know the problem with politicians? The politician is a direct reflection of us. And that's the problem today. You notice they have a lot of self-worth, no humility. They have the answer, and they're not going to even consider any other answer. That's the answer. Look at what social media is doing to us. Social media has invited us to share. But are we sharing? Or are we showing? We're not sharing. We're showing. We're showing other people how smart we are, how rich we are, how happy we are, how complete we are. That's what we're doing. We're showing the world what we want them to see. They don't see the rest. They see all the great things. And yet, studies have now shown between 2010 and 2018, with millennials, there is a 28% rise in suicide and a 40% increase in depression. Why? Because we're doing the exact opposite of what that Facebook button says. Share. We're not sharing. We're showing. And what are we showing? We're showing lies. That's really what it is. I'm just going to start taking pictures of all the worst times in my life. I think that's what I'm going to do. Just when I look the worst, when my family's arguing, just start posting all that stuff. We all think, I shouldn't say that. How many of us think that we're the doctor? We're the doctor. Yeah, I can fix that. You know what? I mean, let me help you with that, okay? I mean, it's not that hard. We forget we're not the doctor. We're in the same hospital, man. We just have different problems. But we all think that we're wearing the white coat when all of us really are wearing that stupid, I don't know who designed it, but we're wearing that stupid smock that opens up in the back and exposes the worst end of us. That's what we're doing. And we're all walking around in the hospital, you know, in those things with a back end hanging out going, yes, well, I'm here to help you. Listen to me. I can help you. If we could just realize that we're wearing the surgical gown and how ridiculous we look, we'd be humble. We all make mistakes, all of us. And then we try to bury them. We try to forget them, justify them. And they gnaw at us and they bend us and they twist us and they distort us. That's what's happening to America. That's what's happening to each of us. We've made critical errors. We've made certain decisions that are bending us and shaping us and twisting us out of shape. We need a chiropractor for our soul, man. We need somebody just to go, there, now, see, that's the way it's supposed to be. And if we don't stand up straight pretty soon, it won't feel right when you do. I think God laughs at us all the time. I mean, because he sees us in the surgical gowns. He sees us with our worst end. And he's just shaking his head, looking at us, going, what the hell? Here's what the Super Bowl commercials told us last night. Remember who you are. You've forgotten. Remember who you are. Remember who you are, why you're here, and what you can be. Stop trying so hard to convince everyone else and yourself of what you are, because you're none of those things. Here's who you are. You're a person just like everybody else. And you've got some really great things that you probably minimize. You probably don't even think because they're yours. I don't know. It just comes easy to me. That's not as good as that. And we're all afraid of something. We're all afraid that somebody's going to see the back of our hospital gown. And our shame and our fear of exposure gets in the way of admitting we're not all that. Instead of just shaking our head and going, geez, man, we're all so much alike. Why don't we do that? Because we don't share. All of us are frightened of something. Of something. I think being found out is the biggest common fear. being found out that, I don't know, we're not good enough. We're not smart enough. We don't ask questions because we don't want to feel stupid. We go along on things that we don't really know, but I don't know everybody else. I don't want to be different. I'm not that smart. If people only knew that I whatever fill in the blank. If people ever found out that I fill in the blank. But that's the lie. So what are we going to do about it? We'll continue in a minute. All right, it's Valentine's Day coming up in a couple of weeks. What is the date? What's the date today, Natasha? The 5th? Jeez, it's the 5th. So here's the thing. We're 9 days away from Valentine's Day. You know, and I know, it's going to come on us, and then we're going to be like, oh, crap. So here's what I want you to do. Right now, call 1-800-FLOWERS, or just go to 1-800-FLOWERS.com, 1-800-FLOWERS.com. It's your Valentine's go-to. If you go to the website, if you order right now, you'll get 24 multicolored roses for only $29.99. You can upgrade to 24 red roses for only $10 more. That ain't happening next week, Jack. Just not happening. It's an unbelievable Valentine's Day offer from 1-800-Flowers.com. $29.99 for the multicolored, 24 red roses for only $10 more. Really beautiful. She's going to love them. She's going to go to the office. Send them to her office. Don't send them at home. Send them to the office so she can go, oh my gosh, look at that. Isn't that great? Roses, you can get them now at 1-800-flowers.com. They are picked at their peak. They're shipped overnight, and that way they are super fresh. 24 multicolored roses, $29.99, or an upgrade to 24 red roses. Do it now. All you have to do is go to 1-800-flowers.com, click on the radio icon, and enter the promo code Beck. That's 1-800-flowers.com, promo code Beck.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Jeez, if people only knew who we are. Last night, I contend the Super Bowl told us exactly who we are. Those are well-tested commercials. And the theme last night is, it's a bright future. We can be better tomorrow than we are today. All we have to do is help one another. Listen to this from Dodge Ram.
You don't have to know about Plato and Aristotle to serve. You don't have to know the theory of relativity to serve. Generated by love.
So what does that say to you? Well, of course it says buy a Dodge Ram truck, but other than that, well, and also that the King family sold out for money for the commercial. But okay, what is it really saying? It's saying you don't have to be better than you are. You just need one thing. What is that one thing he said? More in a minute.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I'm going to talk a little bit about the FISA memo and the role of the press that they have seemed to have forgotten, and why this FISA memo is really important. We'll get into that coming up in just a little while, and a little history that I think the press might want to, they might want to keep, in the dark, dusty parts of the library that nobody will ever read. Unfortunately, I'm a history freak, and I remember some of these things. So I want to go back to the 1970s with the press. We'll do that coming up in just a few minutes, because it seems as though they have forgotten a few things, both good and bad, that they did. I want to focus on answers. And it's really hard. It's really hard. It's easy to get on the bandwagon and bitch about things. It's harder to say, okay, well, can we do anything about that? Last night in the Super Bowl, I really think that the Super Bowl commercials said a couple of things. One, we're not really willing to joke about anything anymore. Because if we're not a society just ripe for mockery, then we're never going to be. I mean, we are just so ripe for just somebody hammering us for all of the stuff that we're doing right now. But nobody's willing to do it. Nobody's willing to go there. And it's going to get crazier and crazier until we do. Until we all just look at each other and go, come on, dude. I mean, let me give you a couple of things. Let me give you a couple of things. Do you know, you remember when people used to say, if we could just be more like Europe. Okay, I will go for that. Could we be more like Europe? Let me give you this. Three states, Virginia, South Carolina, Iowa, prohibit abortion after the 28th week. 20 states say it's around 24 weeks. 11 states prohibit abortion after the 20th week. As a blanket rule, abortions are legal in every single state before pregnancy has reached its 20th week. Would you like to be more like Europe? Abortion is legal in England up to 24 weeks. There is no time limit if there's risk to the woman's life. The Netherlands mandates a 5-day waiting period. Clinics have to provide women with information about abortion alternatives, and only after that is the abortion legal until the 24th week. Hello? A waiting period. A cooling off period. We have it for guns, but not other things that kill people. That's weird. That makes England and the Netherlands more restrictive than 10 states in America. Socialist Sweden allows abortions until the 18th week of pregnancy, bans most of them after the 22nd week. In that 4-week gray period, women can only get an abortion if it's approved by the National Board of Health and Welfare. In Spain, it's legal in the first 14 weeks. In Denmark, abortion is available on demand up to 12 weeks after pregnancies, with exceptions of rape and women's health. In Germany, abortions after the first 12 weeks of pregnancy banned. That makes the abortion law in Germany more restrictive than the most restrictive in the United States, including Utah, you know, where all the Mormons live. Germany is more conservative than them. Belgium, it's legal until 12 weeks. France, it's legal until 12 weeks. Finland, 12 weeks. If a woman can provide a social reason for seeking to terminate her pregnancy, such as poverty, which is, extreme distress, or already having at least 4 children. In Italy, any woman has 90 days from the date of conception to request an abortion. In Switzerland, it's up to 12 weeks. Do you still want to be more like Europe? Left? Do you? What did we learn last night from the Super Bowl commercials? Well, did you see the T-Mobile commercial? Did you see the babies? Here's a refresher.
Welcome to the world, little ones. Yeah, it's a lot to take in. But you come with open minds and the instinct that we are equal. Some people may see your differences and be threatened by them. But you are unstoppable. You'll love who you want. You'll demand fair and equal pay. You will not allow where you come from to dictate where you're going. You will be heard, not dismissed. You will be connected, not alone. Change starts now.
And you know what? If those words didn't have deeper political meanings, we would agree on all of it. Who doesn't want fair and equal pay? Who doesn't want to be heard? You will be heard. That's the problem. People aren't being heard. People on the left, people on the right. I'm telling you, the only ones that are heard right now are the extremists on both sides. Are you being heard? Is the person who says, I agree with those, not in the political sense, but I agree with all of those things. Do you feel you're being heard? I don't think so. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to risk telling the truth. I want you to risk telling a truth. But not a truth for somebody else. A truth about you. Something, risk this week. Risk. Share, as Facebook says. We don't share, we show. We pretend in the hospital of life that we're the doctors and not the patients. We are self-hating egomaniacs, and that's the problem. I want you to just ponder that for a while. Self-hating egomaniacs, does that not describe who we are right now? We think we can fix the planet through spending programs. If that's not an egomaniac, I don't know what is. We think we can change the world with a hashtag. The greatest thing to ever live is also the worst thing that has ever lived. Man. Except we just can't forgive each other and we can't forgive ourselves for some reason or another. Because the other person is not worthy. They have not been humbled enough. No, 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 no. And we can't forgive ourselves because, if people only knew. We have to expose ourselves. We have to admit that we have to come to a place of knowing that we're good, that we are that commercial, we are that baby. We believe those things. All of us, the person that we disagree with believes those things in a non-political way. We believe that. We have to accept that in ourselves and accept that with others. We have to find the divine nature in ourselves and others and accept it. Divine nature while remaining humble. Wow. When those two get out of whack, it's trouble. It's trouble. I'm either not worthy, or I'm the best thing ever. We as a country, USA, USA, or we're the worst ever. We're neither of those. We're both. We're both worthy and really in need of help. The problem is we forget. And even the best of us forget. Even nailed on a cross. My God, why have you forsaken me? Jeez, man, if that guy had doubts, what do you think I'm going to have about myself? If that guy had a moment of, I'm all alone, why have you forsaken me? You know who we are? We're tired. We're poor in spirit. We're struggling. And we're divine. And we're worthy. And we're good. And we're decent. We're kind. We're gracious. We're smart. We're equipped. We have to first see ourselves in truth and stop comparing ourselves to other people on Facebook. Stop living the lie on Facebook. See what your life is really like. And you know what? Do you save your Christmas cards? Because we save our Christmas cards. We put them up on the kitchen cabinets. We look at them. And we see all these families, and they're all so happy, and they're all so great. That was the precursor to Facebook, the Christmas cards. With everybody's in, you're like, geez. And then you get somebody who writes this long-ass letter about, hey, this is what we've been doing this year. And you're like, oh, shut up. I barely have time to write my name, let alone a digest of what I did with my family this year and how great things are. And you start to go, crap. How come they can hold it together? They can't. They can't. They can't. They got other problems. No matter what you see on Facebook, no matter what you see on somebody's Christmas card last year, it's not. We're all wearing a backless hospital surgical gown. We are all, this is a hospital, man, and none of us are the doctors. We're all struggling with something. The minute we can laugh that the back of our ass is hanging out and other people are seeing it, and we can actually recognize, okay, all right, okay, yeah, well, I can see you too. That's when we'll actually make progress. Blinds.com. They are absolutely the best at what they do. And I want Mark from Arizona to tell you about it. He wrote in and said, I heard about Blinds.com on Glenn Beck's program. I had faith in his suggestion. Thank you for that, Mark. He said, I used them. It was amazing service. It was quick delivery. The installation was a breeze. They look fantastic. He said, I ordered more 2 weeks later and I feel the same way. I'm going to tell all my friends Glenn was right. Well, it's just because I've used them, and now you've used them. If you are looking for blind shade, shutters, drapes, any of that, if you want to upgrade your home, the most inexpensive way to upgrade your home is with window coverings. And right now you're going to get free samples, free shipping, free design consultation. Plus they're going to guide you through the installation step by step. Find out yourself why over 20 million Americans have trusted Blinds.com, making them the number one online retailer of custom window coverings. And now through February 15th, you can say that's 10 days away. Save 20% site-wide at blinds.com/talk. That's blinds.com/talk.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Let me go to Dennis in Michigan. Hello, Dennis. You're on the Glenn Beck program.
Hey, good to talk with you. I did not watch the game, so I didn't see any of the commercials. However, it just strikes me that what you're talking about in the commercials that you reference, there seems to be an underlying theme of let's make America great. Now, where have I heard that before? Somewhere.
Well, I think that's, I mean, I prefer not to turn it to politics, but I don't think that's the same message. You didn't see the commercials. It is about making America great, but how, Dennis, do you make America great?
Well, hopefully go back to the way it used to was.
All right. I'm not sure what that means, but okay, Dennis, thank you for your call. I guess you're right if you mean we go back to the principles that made us good. The only reason why America is great, we're not great because of our, you know, industrial might. We're not great because of any of that. We're great because we're good. We've always been a place to where people come and they say the Americans are just different. They're kinder. They're more open. They're more helpful. That's why we're great. We're good. And when we're good to one another, we can accomplish anything. And I think that was the message last night in the commercials. It wasn't political. Even though somebody might have wanted to make it political on either side, it wasn't really political. It was, hey, let's find our core and let's be good again.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
Progressivism is a disease, I think. It's a disease of the mind that once it takes hold, it's over for you. Canada, I believe, is terminally ill with progressivism now. The U.S. prognosis is really a critical condition ourselves. Canada's Senate approved changing a line in their English version of their national anthem, O Canada. They wanted to make it gender neutral. The second line of the anthem will now be true patriot, love in all of us command, rather than the oppressive and insanely offensive old version, true patriot, love in all thy sons command. Oh. So now that their anthem isn't sexist anymore, and I am not kidding you, I am not kidding you, in Sweden, the lions, okay, on their shield, I'm trying to think of a way to say this, the lions on their shield, their crest of their country, which is I don't know how many centuries old, they have these lions on the shield and it's easy to paint, it's harder to do it with sculpture, but they actually did it. They carved, they went and they painted over, or they took a chisel and knocked the genitals off of all of the lions because women said it was oppressive. Look it up. Canadians, now that you're not sexist anymore, feel free to sing your national anthem at any time. Somehow I doubt that the Canadian senators checked with the people. Because that's not the way progressives operate. They just do it. Most Canadians, I would bet, preferred leaving the anthem alone. You know, they've had a song that way for over a century. Nobody is dying because of sexism over the stupid national anthem. This is why we didn't have a national anthem until FDR. Canadian feminist author Margaret Atwood was one of the people behind this effort. Now, she wrote the novel The Handmaid's Tale. You know, you can look that one up for insight into her feelings on tradition and faith and, you know, conservatives. She's very, very subtle. But I will tell you, I've defended her recently because she said enough of the Me Too movement. This is getting dangerous. Even she has some common sense. She's the one that, you know, got them to remove this offensive line. This is the dark side of progressivism everywhere. It presumes to know what is best for you. But it's always the agenda of a very few, forced on the majority. Sometimes the agenda or feelings of just one individual. That's when it becomes a dictatorship. But that's where everybody is headed. I mean, the world over. Progressivism claims to say, we're going, what? We're more free. Are we? We're more free now because you're forcing us to live a life that you agree with. You're forcing me to say the things that I may not agree with. That's more free. Yes, we're more free and more healthy. That's what brings Michelle Obama dictating what your local school, what your cafeteria has to serve. Or a mother in Webster Parish, Louisiana, who got student-led prayer banned from her daughter's high school. Wasn't a problem with anybody. It was a problem with her. Well, now you can't do it. Respect for tradition as a stabilizing, enriching agent in society is one of the key diverging points of the left and the right in the U.S., and decades of progressivism chipping away at the things like religion, the flag, the Constitution, patriotism in general, all the way to the last president's apology tour. It has created an enormous backlash from heartland Americans on both the left and the right, to the point where a whole section of Trump's State of the Union speech was a lecture on respecting the flag, respecting the anthem, respecting the motto, respecting our traditions. It's sad that we have sunk so low that the State of Union has to be turned into a stinking prep rally. Nothing like going to those pep rallies. And we did it. We were USA. We USA. USA. Go Bulldogs. We were a pep rally. That's it. It's easy to laugh at the Canadians for wimping out on the national anthem. But look out. Progressivism is a persistent and progressive disease. Don't think that it can't happen here.
It's Monday, February 5th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
You know, last hour I talked a little bit about arrogance. Self-hating egomaniacs. And we either believe the worst in ourselves, or we believe that we are just, there's nothing can conquer us. As people, we're either the best or the worst. And sometimes that combination gets really dangerous when the worst people begin to believe they're the best. And quite honestly, it usually happens because they want to fit in. Individuals want to fit into a group. It's really hard not to be popular. I mean, it's so much easier. It really is. It's so much easier to be popular. Just go along with the crowd. What? Just go along with the crowd. Standing up for something, standing against something, that's really difficult. And you would think that, you know, the people who have been forced to live their life in a closet for whatever reason, you would think that they would be the first to say, hey, let's not shove other people in the closet. You would think that with the arrogance of the press, that they would remember what made them arrogant. It was their successes. Okay, what were your successes? Well, we exposed what? You exposed what? You exposed people of going wrong. But here's what the press believes. They expose a party for going wrong. They expose one ideology for going wrong. To watch the press bend over backwards over something that is really quite simple. And when I say press, I mean press on both sides. I heard people on the right say that everybody needs to be, this whole thing needs to be dismissed. There's nothing to Carter Page. There's nothing to Flynn. There's nothing to Manafort. Hold on just a second. Wait a minute. I don't get that from that memo. What I get from that memo is the government has gone wrong. What I get from the memo, if it is accurate, is that the government has become so arrogant, and they are so in bed with the press and the left that they believe that they can get away with anything. that they can go to a FISA court, a secret court, and leave really important things out, and no one will care. And the press is so arrogant that they just don't think that their side could ever do it. They're so blind. Have they watched their own movie, The Washington Post? If you haven't seen that movie, you should. It's really good. And it's really, I think it's really fair. The Tom Hanks character is there like, holy cow, Jack Kennedy. I thought Jack Kennedy was a friend. No, he wasn't a friend. As it points out in the movie, he was keeping the people that could make his life and excuse him of a lot of things very close. That's what happened, Bill Bradley. That's what happened. And he figured that out in the movie. But apparently the people in the press don't get that. Why? Because they have an agenda. So the Washington Post, they expose all the president's men. They expose Watergate. And what was Watergate? Watergate was not about a break-in. It was about spying on your competition and then using that information and trying to twist it and use it in the press. Then, after the break-in was discovered, then it was about the president instructing the FBI and Justice Department to go rogue and start to use resources to obstruct justice to make sure that this was all covered up. It was the cover-up that was the problem. Now, I don't know about you, but boy, man, a lot of this sounds familiar. What is this really about? It's about Russia trying to get information and then using that information in the press to affect the society, to get us all to not believe in the Democrats or the Republicans and to start fighting against each other. And did the FBI and the DOJ do exactly what they were doing in Watergate? Now, if you listen to any of the pundits this weekend, absolutely not. That's not possible. How could you possibly say that? Well, I don't know. It's happened before. What makes you so sure it's not happening now? I mean, I want the facts. I don't want all of this. I don't want people drawing conclusions on what's true because I don't know what's true yet. But I know it's true in the past. Our founders knew the First Amendment had to be protected. But that halo of justice that the press gets, man, it's a little tarnished. Let's just put this in the best terms. Journalists, even the very best, are human. In 1980, the same Washington Post, with the same editor, Ben Bradley, he wanted to expand the readership of the Post into the black community. And so the paper made an effort to hire more minority journalists. One of them, her name was Janet Cook. She was a black female reporter from Ohio. She was an aggressive reporter. She was a good writer. She was a fast rising star. The Washington Post was in its heyday. And it had a very competitive environment. And she really wanted to break a big story and win a Pulitzer Prize. So she went. She was asked to write a story about DC's growing heroin problem. And she thought, this is great. I'm going to win a Pulitzer on this one. So she went into the inner city of DC. She went to the places where heroin, the epidemic at the time, was the worst. And she learned that she was, you know, that there were children were heroin addicts, and she was appalled by this. And then she found a little boy, 8 years old, heroin addict. His name was Jimmy. And she knew she had her hook. She could see the Pulitzer. She wrote her feature story called Jimmy's World. And it blew away all of the editors at the Post. Bob Woodward, who is then the assistant managing editor. He's the guy who said, this has got to be a front page story. Quoting, Jimmy is an 8-year-old and a third-generation heroin addict. Precocious little boy with sandy hair, velvety brown eyes, and needle marks freckling the baby-smooth skin of his thin brown arms. He nestles in a large beige reclining chair in the living room of his comfortably furnished home in southeast Washington. There's almost a cherubic expression on his small round face as he talks about life and clothes and money, the Baltimore O's, and heroin. He's been addicted since the age of 5. The readers were hooked and appalled and saddened. The mayor's office instructed the police, "We've got to get this boy medical treatment." But Jimmy had disappeared, gone underground. No one knew where he was. Cook said, "Ben, you don't understand. I promised them anonymity. I promised them that this wouldn't happen, and now it has, and they've gotten out." Also, Mom's boyfriend had threatened, you know, the boy's life if they discovered his whereabouts, because he's not going to prison. People were even more outraged. Now what was going to happen to Jimmy? A few months later, Cook got her dream. She won her Pulitzer Prize for feature writing. She had to submit some autobiographical information to the prize committee, but there was a slight snag there. The committee contacted the Post when they couldn't verify that Cook had graduated from Vassar College, magna cum laude. Turns out she only attended Vassar her freshman year. She actually graduated from the University of Toledo with a BA degree, not with a master's degree, as she told the Pulitzer Committee. So they called her in for an explanation. Unfortunately for her, the Washington Post had some real problems, and they knew they were brewing here because her resume lies were the least of her lies. After hours of grilling, she finally confessed that Jimmy's world was entirely made up. The little sandy brown-haired boy with big, beautiful eyes, needle marks on his arms, none of that was true. So here's the Washington Post, the paper that uncovered Watergate, the biggest political scandal in American history. They failed to even vet her resume. It published a front page Pulitzer Prize winning feature story that was 100% made up, and nobody caught it. Well, that can't happen. How could the same place produce a golden standard of journalism during Watergate and the worst case scenario of journalism with Jimmy's world? The answer is we're all human. We're all human. Remarkably, neither Ben Bradley or Bob Woodward resigned over the incident. This is a different time. And maybe the All the President's Men halo, maybe that helped save them. I tell you this story not to say, see, it's all fake news, because it's not. We have to get past this idea that one side of the aisle's news is always false. Sometimes it's true. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's true in the newspapers. Sometimes it's true about the journalists. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's true about the government. Sometimes it's not. But we know this. If there isn't someone standing guard that says, you know what, I'm going to vet that. You know, hang on just a second. I'm just not going to go, you're my friend and I love you and everything, but I got to do my job. Something's not right here. Journalists, do your damn job. And America will be a better place for it. Let me tell you a little bit about Simply Safe, the home security company that has just reinvented their product. I mean, this is really good. I have watched them grow from a company of 10 people to the fastest growing home security company in the nation, protecting now over 2 million people. And I'm really excited to tell you they have a brand new home security system. It's the all new Simply Safe. It has been completely rebuilt and redesigned. They've added new safeguards to the products. And what it does is it protects against power outages and down Wi-Fi and cut landlines. And they've taken bats and hammers to it. It's really good. It's really small. And yet it's really, really super powerful. It's been redesigned, practically invisible. Now, what's really, truly amazing is they have spent years and years and years and years developing this. And you're still going to get the incredible same price, 24/7 protection, $15 a month. There is no contract. You own the system. Just go to the website at simplysavebeck.com. Scroll down. See how much money you are going to save. It's really remarkable. See how much money you're going to save in the first year of having a Simply Safe home security system. SimplySafeBeck.com. That's SimplySafeBeck.com.
Glenn Beck Mercury. Glenn Beck.
All right, coming up in a second, we're going to take on the Super Bowl. It was like living in a parallel universe. The game was good and the commercial sucked. The Patriots lost and the Eagles won. No, I mean, what happened? It's not the way it's supposed to work out. We'll talk a little bit about that and the messages that we found in the commercials that I think are interesting this year. And the game itself coming up in just a second.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
What kind of parallel universe do we live in where the game is really good and exciting, the commercials are bad, halftime is good and non-controversial, the Patriots lose and the Eagles win? Oh, and a dead guy did a duet during the halftime.
Which people are upset by.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like Prince is deity. Okay.
Think he said that he didn't want that.
He was a popular pop star who died of an overdose. he didn't want the duet thing being done, but it's sort of not what he did. He just projected him on a big sheet.
He sang with him.
Right. I thought it was great.
That's a duet. I loved it.
I thought it was great.
Yeah. I mean, it was amazing because how did the Prince estate lose control of that?
Yeah.
So they couldn't stop it. And Martin Luther King with that Dodge Ram commercial, his family, you know this,
Pat. If there's anybody that they should be pissed off at,
it's them.
It's the King family.
Yeah.
They're the ones who okayed it.
They sold it.
Right.
Yeah. Or at least okayed it.
They made money from that. They made a lot of money. They made a lot of money from that.
I refuse to hear that.
Yeah, well, it's true. A lot of people do refuse to hear it, but they need to.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, it's not Dodge you should be pissed off at. It's the King family.
So did you see that they had to grease? They actually used Crisco to grease the light poles in Philadelphia?
Yeah, so people wouldn't climb up them?
Yeah.
Yeah, and they did anyway?
They I don't know if you saw this. They turned over cars. They set them on fire. Yeah, I mean they did $5 million of improvements to Philadelphia last night.
But so,
yeah. You get that joke if you lived in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Wow.
I've never understood though the setting your city on fire because you won the Super Bowl.
No.
I don't get that.
No, I watched last night. I tweeted this out. I just love dummies on tape. You know, I love people who are doing something illegal and they're like, here, give me a Facebook. It's not going to work out well for you, dude.
No.
It's just not going to work out well.
I'm glad they do it, but it's stupid.
It's wildly entertaining.
Yeah, it is.
Wildly entertaining. Did you get the feeling last night that this was the real life Apollo Creed, Rocky Balboa?
Yeah.
All the way through it, I'm like... Yeah. Tom Brady is Apollo Creed. He's the guy who's, you know, supposed to win. He's got everything. And here comes Philadelphia
with a guy with a second or third string quarterback who does incredibly well and pulls it out for him. Yeah, it was like Apollo Creed and Rocky.
So can I ask you a politically incorrect question?
Mm-hmm.
What happened? I mean, Philadelphia, what happened with third string? What happened? Is this what's been going on? You know, they've all come together, and I'm not saying this is God making them win, but they all came together and united around something.
They did
bigger something and bigger. Better.
Yeah. Well, that's what we were just talking about this in the other room. I mean, this has been a really spiritual year for the Eagles, and it may have bonded them together in a way that other teams weren't bonded together. And I'm not saying that God wanted them to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I don't think he cares.
But for them being on his side, you know, it doesn't hurt, right? I mean, when you...
Well, I think
when you commit your life to God, good things are going to happen. You know that.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm just thinking of, you know, Lincoln, Martin Luther King, Paul, Jesus. I mean, yes, good things all happen in the end, but it wasn't like they were like, hey, I'm going to Disney World.
It doesn't necessarily mean you're going to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, it's not, you know, Paul wasn't like, hey, and after they hang me up, sorry, they crucify me upside down, I'm going to see Mickey Mouse.
There were some good times in between, though, for Paul. There were some good times in between.
Yeah.
Yeah. Between the road and the hanging upside down. Some good things. But
can I ask you something? Once you've been crucified, doesn't that kind of you know, all the good times
kinda ruins the other good times?
You know, you're looking back on your life and you're like, those are good times. It ended in crucifixion, which wasn't always the best. So what happens to Tom Brady now?
I think he goes to another Super Bowl next year. I think that's what happens to him. He'll be back for his ninth next year. And probably win that one. They just can't be stopped. The Patriots just can't be stopped. I don't understand it.
I would just like to remind you that less than 24 hours ago,
they were stopped. Yeah, so. but they were in it again. I mean, they have lost three of these now, but they won five. So they'll be back again. It's already eight in 14 years.
I'm a little sick of them. Can I ask you this? Did you have any idea how screwed up we were as a nation? Did you know that Justin Timberlake is now known as the King of Pop?
No. Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
I
got the lecture of my life from my children last night. From Mary, who is 30, all the way down to Cheyenne, who is 12.
But Justin Timberlake is the king of pop.
That's what they call him. Dad, he is the biggest star of our generation. He is our Michael Jackson. They call him the King of Pop. No, they don't. No, they do not.
Justin
Timberlake.
I can name one song.
I knew the one with the Trolls.
Bring Sexy Back. That's about it.
I don't even know that one.
I didn't know the Trolls one because we haven't watched that.
Oh, I've watched Trolls, so I knew that one.
Wow.
Yeah, I watched that last night, and I thought, you know, he's good, but I'm like, he's the King of Pop now? Really? That guy?
Wow.
The NSYNC guy?
The King of Pop guy needs to have better audio people because his audio was really bad last night.
That's weird because I didn't know. No, I didn't. Okay. I watched the whole thing. Didn't catch it. Didn't catch it.
Out of phase and too low, and it was just really bad. The King of Pop should ask for better audio people, I think. Next time.
I thought it was pretty good.
It wasn't bad. It wasn't terrible. And I did like the Prince thing, which I guess I'm not supposed to.
And I liked the thing when he went up into the crowd with a little kid, you know, that little kid's a star now and stuff.
That was cool.
I couldn't help but watch that kid. He took a picture. He took a selfie. But then here's Justin Timberlake. The Super Bowl. He's on camera next to Justin Timberlake, who I don't know if you know this, is the King of Pop. And he gets his selfie, and then he spends the rest of the time looking down at his camera and looking at the photo, or I don't know what he's doing.
When Timberlake is right there next to him.
Yeah, he's looking at his phone.
That's how we live now, right?
Right.
We live through our phone.
Dude, he's right next to you. This is happening in real time. I know you got your picture. How about seeing the rest of it?
Interact with him.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
That is where we are, though. I see that. You see that all the time. People go to Disneyland and live it through their phone. I just like to live the moment. I don't, of course, I'm not the right person for that because I never use a phone, and neither do you.
No.
So we're not the right people to be talking about this.
No.
But when you think about who else could there be for King of Pop, for that title?
You don't have to give that title out.
I guess.
I mean,
not.
Look, if there's a plague, if there's a plague, and there's only like 100 of us left, and Pat and I are the most talented, you don't name me or Pat the King of Pop. You just don't. I don't think we have to tell anybody. There's no kingdom that must be given over once the last king dies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just doesn't work that way. Could I ask you a question about the Trump investigation and the FISA memo?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
I thought it was anticlimactic, as usual. I thought what did the memo really tell us? And now they're doing an anti-memo memo against that memo.
Yeah.
And that's probably not going to be a big deal either. It just didn't seem to have a lot of there.
So, you know, it's really interesting because I was watching the news and I didn't relate to either side.
Yeah, I don't know.
I watched it on Fox and I thought, okay, mm-hmm. I'm going to get some information on Fox. No, I really didn't. What I got was, this is the biggest thing of all time and all investigations must end and Donald Trump should be given a second term as an apology. It was like, what? Then I flip over and the mainstream media is just as bad. There is absolutely nothing to this. This shows that Donald Trump is the guy we thought he was. No, it doesn't say that either.
No. It didn't say much of anything to me.
It did about Carter Page.
But he was under investigation
already
prior
to
the campaign.
I know. But it only goes to this, and this is nothing to do with Trump, that you had Flynn, who was doing nefarious things.
Yeah, and we already know that.
Yep. You had Manafort doing nefarious things, and you had Carter Page, who may have been doing nefarious things, but he's so dumb that he may not have known it.
Oh, my gosh.
So it shows that Russia was trying to target exactly, let me flip this away from Trump, exactly the way they were trying to target Hillary and, according to the FBI, a vast number of people in Congress and in the Senate for Uranium One. They have mm-hmm. a real network that is trying to infiltrate at the highest levels. That's what that shows.
And that's what we should be focused on.
Correct. But we're not.
Not at all.
No.
Nobody's even talking about that.
No.
Nobody's even worried about the fact that the Russians are involved
in
our system.
And I don't think we're going to go anywhere with this.
No, I don't either.
I think both sides have just drawn this impossible line that it either means nothing at all, or it means
everything.
Everything. What? No. No, this memo doesn't. Release the actual FISA documents. By the way, you know how they said, this is going to hurt national security. People might die because of this.
What?
Can you?
I can't. No.
You read the whole thing, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
There was nothing redacted.
There was nothing.
And there was nothing to see.
There was no names. There was nothing.
Nothing
there
security was nothing. Wise at all.
Nothing. So
we're just continually.
So why was the DOJ and the FBI so upset? Why did they say this was so dangerous and so reckless? What was in it?
They just didn't want it released, right?
Which kind of makes the case.
It does.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
All right. Pat Gray from Pat Gray Unleashed, coming up in about 12 or 13 minutes, only on the Blaze Radio Network, immediately following this at theblaze.com/TV. Or you can go to theblaze.com and just listen to it. Yeah, /radio. Just listen to it. Hey, we're here for you, whatever way you want to view it. I want to tell you about our sponsor, 1-800-Flowers.com. Valentine's flowers come in all shapes and prices. You know, you want to do something nice for the one that you love, and you know, if you're in trouble, you might want to spend more money on it, or you know, or not. 1-800-Flowers.com is the place to go for not only flowers but also really good chocolates and treats and other gifts. I mean, check the website out; it's enormous, and they have everything from, you know, I think $10 all the way up to $10,000, literally $10,000. It's crazy.
Anyway, right now they have a special. You can get 24 multicolored roses for only $29.99, or you can upgrade to 24 red roses for $10 more. Have you ever given your Valentine 24 roses before? It's beautiful. $10 more right now, only from 1-800-Flowers.com, 1-800-Flowers.com. They are picked right at the field, right at the peak, and they are shipped to you, and next week is Valentine's Day. Please do this now. You can get a dozen colored roses for $19.99, or you, I'm sorry, 24 colored roses at $19.99, or you can get 24 for $10 more, and they're all red. 1-800-Flowers.com. 1-800-Flowers.com. Promo code Beck. Make sure you click on the radio icon and enter the promo code Beck, because that way you'll see all the deals. It is 1-800-Flowers.com. Do it today. Promo code Beck.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. Glenn Beck.
So glad you've joined us. Let's go to Minnesota and Brian. Hello, Brian.
Hello, Mr. Beck. How are you?
I'm very good. How are you? Thanks for holding.
You bet. Hey, I just wanted to say, I wanted to preface this with, I'm at work and I don't listen to you very often. And I think it's a bit of serendipity that I happened to listen to you a while ago. The first thing I heard was MLK saying something about having a heart full of grace.
Yeah.
And then you talked about being honest with yourself. And you went on that line for quite some time. I served our country in the 2nd of the 75th Ranger Regiment. And I've been honest with myself ever since I got out. I've hated myself. I've despised myself. And I'm a husband and I'm a father. And what you said, you know, it's hard for people to reach me at a certain level, because I don't want people to, because I like to keep people away from me, except for my wife and my daughter. I'm not a huge people person. I don't like people, and I think it's because I don't like myself. I've never really had an epiphany moment in my life. I certainly never expected one from Glenn Beck. But that's what happened. I had to pull my truck over, and it moved me to tears to realize how much I can't stand myself and how much of an issue I have being the kind of person that I need to be to guide my family. And all because of the fact that I don't serve anymore and I feel useless. I feel emasculated, and I have no idea how I got to this point today. I have no idea why I'm at this point right now, because I certainly didn't expect it, and I certainly didn't expect it at the time that it happened, but I'm glad that it did.
Brian,
I just wanted to let you know that.
I just have to tell you, you're not alone, brother, and I have been in exactly your place. I've been there. And it gets better. It really does. You just, now that you've recognized it, now you can start taking baby steps. And a year from now, you won't recognize how great your life is. Thanks for calling.
Glenn Beck. Mercury.